Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 704. I'm finally kind of just getting my voice back after Comic-Con. If you went, I hope you had an amazing time. Let's head over to the Nerdist Community Corkboard. This is from Darian Basinger, who is writing to tell us about the grand opening on July 18th in Eugene, Oregon, for Custom Cranium, which is a natural history store and art gallery featuring skulls, bones, hides, fur, taxidermy, local artists' work, and a small museum section for educational purposes. They focus on osteopreparation and travel for educational presentations all over Oregon and Washington. And currently the website is just a mirror of their Facebook page, but they're working on something more robust. So please go in and visit. That is Custom Cranium, and I am absolutely going to go there when I'm in the Pacific Northwest. Well job, Darian. Also, Ben Blacker, one of the writers behind Thrilling Adventure Hour, and also host of Nerdist Writers Panel, and works on the sister podcast Nerdist Comics Panel. But this week, Ben Blacker, Nerdist Writers Panel, interviewed Chris Carter. So if you're an X-Files fan, you probably want to listen to that. And I was very proud of Ben, because a lot of people at Comic-Con specifically pointed Ben out to me and said, you know, I also really love the Nerdist Writers Panel. So good job, Ben Blacker, and thank you for keeping us relevant in the writing space, Benjamin J. Blacker? I don't know his middle initial. When in doubt, you know, I'd always say J. That's how I roll. This episode is Chad Coleman, who, of course, played Tyrese on Walking Dead. And if you're not caught up, too bad, you should be. And he's not on the show anymore. But I miss him, because Chad's a good dude and Tyrese is a fantastic character. But fear not, because he is also in a show called The Expanse, which is coming to Sci-Fi this December. And he's promoting this really super cool project called Treadwater. And Treadwater basically is a single story told through multiple platforms and mediums. And it all connects back to that one story. So you can engage with it in multiple platforms. It's a graphic novel series, but also a motion comic, an interactive web experience, short form video content, a video game, and even a TV show. But Chad has always been nothing but lovely and dear to me, and was really great on the podcast. We recorded this a couple months ago, but plopped it down now. And that's it. It's a Nerdist Podcast number 704. Katie, roll the thing!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
It's a guest book, so you got to.
Oh, I get it. Oh, I see what it is now.
You got to sign the guest book.
The Chewbacca guest book.
It is the Chewbacca guest book. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Great.
That is crazy. I like that.
It's good. I took it to the Marvel screenings we're doing last night.
And, oh wow!
Stan Lee drew a stick figure Spider-Man.
Shit. Damn. Yeah.
And he wrote Excelsior.
Oh, fuck, man. That's it.
Excelsior.
I met him. He was having lunch at near Rodale Drive. And so I just went out and talked to him. But, you know, and he said, well, you know, you don't look dead. You look good, you know.
Last night, the thing he was going off at in the marathon was, he said, I don't like to think of my roles as cameos. I like to think of them as brief supporting roles.
Only he knows the difference.
Chad Coleman.
Yes, brother.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, bro. It's good to be here.
Now, I did not expect. Oh, these are going to be spoilers. Anyway, everyone fucking knows. I didn't expect episode one of the B season this season. I'm like, what the fuck? Because no, I don't want to know anything in advance.
Okay.
So I saw it alongside everyone else.
Right.
And that episode, I mean, it sucked that you died, but that was like an art film. That was an unbelievable, I mean, what a... sometimes people just die, and it's like, oh, they're dead.
Right.
What an episode for Tyrese.
Hey, man, they it was an homage to the man. If you didn't know who he was before that, by the time of the end of that episode, you certainly knew who he was. And that's Scott Gimple, you know.
Yeah.
And Robert Kirkman saying, we honor this character. We love this guy. We hate to see him go, but we're going to take him out in a way that hopefully you won't forget.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I do have to apologize for one other thing. I'm going to be honest with you. But then I have a reason, okay?
Oh.
I haven't seen The Wire yet because I'm afraid of it.
Ooh.
I know. Okay. It is.
Oh, boy.
It is without
a
doubt.
Without Chad. Yep. Chris Hardwick.
Okay, I'm gonna watch it.
Chris.
I know.
Hardwick.
I know.
One of the baddest mothers on the earth.
Do I get moxie points for admitting it?
You do.
Here's the thing. The Wire is one of those shows, and I think this happens sometimes with Walking Dead and Breaking Bad, where when it was sort of like midway through its run, people were like, you gotta watch The Wire. It's the best fucking show on television.
Right.
Like, yeah, I know. But I feel so much pressure now that it almost seems like five seasons.
That's two less you gotta watch now. See, what the hell are we doing? Come on.
I'm gonna make you a promise, Chad Coleman.
Yes.
The next time I see you, which is very likely be at like Comic-Con, okay, in a couple months.
Okay.
I will have watched The Wire by that point.
Oh, really?
Because without a doubt, it's one of those things where even when I go, when I say, oh, Breaking Bad or Walking Dead, people go, but have you seen The Wire?
Right.
And so I am going to watch a show, but it is the sort of downside to binge watching, which is I feel so much pressure because I know how involved the show is and I know it's one of the most intricate shows.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I sort of sometimes when I come home from work after like 12 hours, I'm like, I don't know if I have the brain power.
That's true. Now everybody heard the hardest working man in showbiz say. See how much time you got now? Let me be clear about this. Okay, Comic-Con will be in
July.
All right, so you got
two and a half months.
Okay, yeah, you can get it done. But you are right, man. It's very dense, and it's going to take you a minute to get into it. You're not going to know what the hell they're talking about. It's obtuse, as well it should be. You're looking through a lens that you probably haven't looked through before. So it takes a minute to get, you know, the jargon, the feel, and to feel connected and see where the story's going. And it's told in slow motion. So, you know, I mean, you get a sense of that from The Walking Dead, but this is even more dragged out. So,
yeah.
But and I know that doesn't sound like a great plug for the show.
No, but
trust me, it is. And, but yeah, you're going to have to, it's going to be hard because if you're working all day long and you come home and you try to binge watch, I don't see that happening. You're going to have to make space for this thing, man. I'm serious. I don't know if it's on a weekend or what, but you're going to need that time because it's dense.
Yeah. And does it feel any different making a show like that than any other kind of show? I mean, do you feel it as an actor? Do you feel how dense it is as an actor, or are you just focused on just your character and what your character has to accomplish?
It's tricky because it can appear as if nothing is really going on. So you got to have your, you know, the depth chart meter really clicking on high,
yep.
You know, because as human beings, we constantly try to hide, you know, who we are
in
a way. You know, you don't want the things that you just don't want people to see. So it's masked in that kind of way. So when you read it initially, you just think, oh, these guys are just talking about going to the store. Then you go, oh, shit, right. But, that store, oh, that's right. Oh, and that dude over there, he's right across the street from the store. This thing is going on. And so you have to connect the dots like that, and then you play it in a different way.
And this idea of, you know, always trying to hide who we are from people. Do you sneak those personal things into your character?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, from very early on, that's actually a part of what they call technique. You know, you use your personal life. You know, that's how most of us is acting, you know, acting as therapy for us, because we're able to take those things that in real life I'd probably be incredibly uncomfortable sharing with you, mm-hmm. and just dump it all right in there. So, you know, I mean, it holds up pretty well for a while. Now, if you got issues in your own life,
yeah,
you can't use acting just, you know, all the way through, because
right.
you'll be a wreck. And we see some who are, so
of course.
You know, so I try to take care of my end, you know, Chad the person, Chad the actor. But for a while, and initially, I'll tell you why, because, you know, like I grew up in foster care, right? Mm-hmm. So I remember talking to my uncle, who was he's a doctor, and it's pediatrics was his thing. And so I would say to him, man, I'm just happy. I'm just fortunate that we're not living in the projects. You know, my foster parents are really good people. I'm good. He's like, Chad, if I were to sit you down, you would see that there are things inside you. There's trauma and stuff. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I'm good. So I go further along, and I'm in acting class. And my teacher, I'm doing a scene from A Raisin in the Sun, and my teacher says, son, you're doing a really good job of saying it, but it's got to come from here. And he's jammed his finger in my gut. He said, I don't go off stage. I don't care what you think about, what you do, but you got to come back and really fulfill the emotional obligations of this scene. So I go off the stage, and who did I think about? Because I wasn't living with my foster parents at that time, but I thought about them. I came back and did the scene and had an out-of-body experience. Now, I stayed within the framework of the play, but all of this emotion came out of me. So you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what my uncle said then, I wasn't investigating it that way. I was just, you know, I was kind of looking at the blessings, but not knowing that there's an internal impact on you when you have that kind of trauma in your life. And it came back, and then when I thought of them, it brought all this emotion out of me. And I've been using, you know, my life in that way for quite a while. I was able to do that till I realized that I am an instrument, you know? So I don't necessarily need to think about any of these kinds of things, because I'm gifted to be able to do this. Now, you can use it or not, but I've matured enough in my skilled level that I don't have to do that. But initially and early on, and for a lot of actors, that's the kind of stuff. So they always say, like, you know, people who've had troubled lives make better actors. I don't know if that's necessarily true.
I think actors are really good at essentially, and hearing you describe it, it almost sounds like you're a medium for a ghost of your former self. Like you're channeling.
Sweet.
You're channeling these spirits who happen to be you at an earlier time.
That's right.
That are coming out. That's a really
good,
strange
brother.
Way to think of it.
Yeah.
Did you know your birth parents?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah. That was traumatic too.
Of course it was. Of course it was. But you know what I think is really good for people to hear is that people make a lot of excuses as to why they do or don't do things. Oh, right. I don't know. I can't do this. And yes, there are some things in life that are, you know, that are really hardcore obstacles.
Yeah.
Then there are other obstacles that people just create with their minds.
Yeah.
So to hear a story of a guy who grew up the way you did, managed to use it as a constructive tool,
right.
I think that's really important for people to hear, because I think it helps people who are going through something similar, and then it shows people who don't really have problems but create problems. You know, like, oh yeah, I guess slow internet's not the biggest problem in the world right now. Or I guess, you know.
Yes, brother, it's perspective, you know? It's perspective for many folks. And you know, I'd have to do that with my kids, you know? It's like, listen, the fact that you're doing a play and you have a lot of homework and you can't do the homework because you're doing a play, it's really not that heavy, baby. Okay, boo?
I know you think this is the worst thing in the world.
You're going to work through that.
It's not.
So, but yeah, I mean, if it can inspire, I was very fortunate. I will say that, you know, I did have a... I was exposed to something early on that could be that kind of conduit for all that stuff for me. So that was fortunate. I was fortunate in that way.
How did that affect? How many kids do you have?
Two.
And how did that affect how you interact and raise your own kids? How did that experience happen?
Well, okay, so when you ask about like my real parents, so my father was a wonderful example of what not to do.
Sure.
So my uncle was a great example of what to do. You know, he embraced me and tried to, you know, help me and mature as a young man. And so, and all of the rest of the variables and people involved, I just kind of took a look and kind of sized things up and recognized that I didn't like when people were mean to me. So I'm not mean to my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy love, man. You know, I hate to be warm and fuzzy, but you know, it's warm, it's loving, it's nurturing, but it is discipline and focus.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I'm very fair with them. We listen, we have dialogue. I told my daughter. And now she's 15 years old.
Oh, yeah. Said,
hey, I raised her to, we can have a conversation.
Sure.
And now it's bite me in the ass. Like, yo, I just want us to shut the fuck up. No, baby. I don't want to say that. Go right ahead, baby.
No, don't tell me.
You want to tell me how stupid I am? Go ahead, baby. Tell me. It's okay. I'm listening. Daddy's listening. It's all right. I'm driving now. Please come. But so it's a real... Man, it's pretty amazing because it's an incredibly challenging way of doing things. I came up in an era where you are seen and not heard. You sit down, you shut up.
Right.
You eat, do your homework, go to bed. I don't, you know, and it was kind of like suppress you, which is why I'm glad I was, you know, was able to get into acting. So that's why the play, going to school and play rehearsal was the thing because.
Yeah.
All that suppression, you know, was removed. So I'm always open to hear her and experience her. But, you know, it's just you have to harness it because at this point, you know, she's in kind of system overload emotionally.
Yeah.
And how much more intelligent she is than most of the thinking world. So.
Well, also you know, I feel like all the social media stuff really feeds into the worst part of growing up, because kids have enough, you know, as they're being flooded with hormones and emotions and things that they don't understand yet, mm-hmm. and the social pressures that they have of just going to a school and
just peer pressure, yeah.
But now there's this global pressure for them and standards that they feel like they have to achieve.
Absolutely.
And I mean, like standards that they shouldn't have to worry about. That's physical right. Standards and popularity standards, yeah. And all that shit.
Everything was there, but personified 1,000 times over.
Right.
It was all there. I mean, we felt those things growing up, you know,
mm-hmm.
the pecking order, who's coolest, how am I being accepted? Am I getting the girls? You know, the girls or do the guys like me? How do I look? Da, da, da. We went through all of that, but we just didn't go through it under this huge kind of microscope, if you yeah. will. And so and it's so much bad information. You know
sure.
what I mean? I think we were able to circumvent some of that
yeah.
just by the sheer fact that we didn't hear it, you know?
Right.
And so now when you look at us and we think about not having cell phones, you know, now we have cell phones. And back then, what did we do? But we still had those same things going on. They just didn't go on to the magnitude that
right.
they do today. And so with all of that, it can be that much more overwhelming, all of it. You know, the peer pressure, the, you know, who am I? How do I fit in? You know, all that kind of stuff. And so she has to negotiate that. But some of the positive sides of it is, it's obviously when you get good information, you know, they're able to learn things at a rate that we aren't able to, you know, we weren't able to,
right.
you know, I mean, you just simply Google the thing, you know, Google the answer. Why don't they all get straight A's?
What's the best way you feel like you can be a supportive parental influence on someone who's having to deal with all of everything that's going on right now? How do you be there?
I always tell her and tell anybody, I said, baby, you're 15 years old. It's the age of self-determination. You have to decide the person you want to be. You wake up every day and you decide who you want to be. I want to be a kind, loving, open, friendly, fearless person today. Then go be it.
Yeah, I think people still do that at 25 or 35.
Oh no, absolutely.
It's not exclusive to the teenagers,
but it is.
I do it myself.
You kind of have to. You sort of do have to regulate that way.
I was just talking to some. I was talking to some inmates, and I told these guys, I mean, this is what I've learned. So that's why I carry it out that way, because you just can't live random, you know.
Yeah.
There's far too much going on and far too much coming at you to try to misguide, misdirect, distract you. So you have to be clearly focused on who you are and what you're about. And so I told them, and I said, listen, and this kind of encapsulates everything we're saying. Like, we all were victims on some level because we came to the world and we were babies. So who's your parents?
Right.
Hey, parents. Where are you? So if you are not fortunate enough to have some grounded, well-rounded, healthy parents, you're going to be up against a few things.
Yeah.
So now if you can make your way through that and get to the other side of that, then you can realize that, okay, now I get to decide. When you reach that point, and if you don't know, that's cool too, but decide to get some good information, mm-hmm. you know. Now, if you do that, then you start learning. Then you can start putting pieces together, and you can kind of, you know, shape yourself to that degree. And that's a good thing. But a lot of people don't know that. And a lot of people get stuck in victimization. And it's like, I hear you. That did happen. Now, it could have happened a lot of times. But at some point, it stopped happening. And so when did you decide to continue to allow it to happen in your head over and over and over and over? That's what we do to ourselves. That I think that's what self-determination. Hey, you can stop the tape in your head and you can create a new road for yourself. You can do it. I'm not talking about how hard or easy it is. I tell my daughter all the time. I don't want to hear hard or easy. I just want to hear I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And do, you know, do a sound thing. I didn't say do something stupid. You know, don't make dumb decisions. You know,
that's the key word is decision. Is every good or bad thing starts with a decision.
Yeah.
And but then also I feel like a lot of bad things come from indecision. I'm like, oh, I don't know, or should I? It was like, just decide, like make a decision.
Yeah, but I would err on the side of
good
weighing it out. You know, if it takes time. Okay.
Of course.
You know, people, you know, that's one of the qualities that people kind of rage about with our fearless leader.
Right.
So, yeah, come on, man, make a decision. Dude, it's okay with me. I'd rather that you not make a bad decision, you know?
Right.
Then let me see if I'm getting this right. I'd rather you not decide and mull it over and over and over than make a bad decision.
Sure.
So
I just hope that people don't get trapped by, I think there is a certain point where it's like, all right.
What? No,
shit, get off the
Yeah, that is true. That is true. That I agree with. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to shit. Well, that was literally my decision. I didn't know if I was going to stay on the pod or shit, but I just decided in the case of favor of shitting.
Feel better?
I do. Oh,
why did I wait so long to shit? God, this feels so good. All I had to do was... It's true, especially in our industry. Like, there are those, you know, I tell the kids all the time, you know, don't talk about it, be about it.
Oh, that's such a good quote.
Yeah. You know, are you acting? Are you in the school play? Are you reading a play? You know, what are you actually doing?
Right.
Don't tell me what you want to do. Demonstrate it in the way you live. That's where I'm at.
Now, what do you go? This is when you're talking to the inmates. Is this something that you get to do regularly, or
every year I do that in my hometown of Richmond, Virginia? Well, we do something called a date with dad dance, and that's to encourage a positive, good relationship between a daughter and a father, which we know is huge. You know, we play a huge part in, you know, their self-esteem, and we're that first opposite sex relationship, you know. So it's a crucial relationship. So every year we celebrate with a dance. When this is through an organization called Camp Diva, and this girl, young lady, Angela Patton, is doing. She does. She has a TED Talk and everything, so you can check her out, campdiva.org, and Angela Patton. She runs this program where she's really doing some wonderful things for young African American girls in my hometown. So one year, one girl said, "Well, I can't go to the dance because," and they were like, "Why?" And she's like, "My dad's in prison," and all those other little girls, through all of that positive nurturing, they said, "Well, why don't we just do the date with Dad dance in the prison?"
Right. Well, why don't we do that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we ended up taking it into the prison. Chief Woody, I mean, that's an amazing thing. He would say, "Come on in." So you know how deep this really is. It's huge. So to see these little girls dress up and their fathers, even though they're inmates, are allowed to put on their suits and they come together, man, it's an incredible thing, with all sorts of games and stuff to, you know, just nurture that relationship. Because no matter what, he's still her parent.
You know? Of course.
And so let's try to, once again, let's take lemons and make lemonade, you know.
Until the governor shows up to the prison.
And say,
I'm exactly. Sorry, I had to bring it back to right. That.
And then it's game on.
And then it's game on.
So, yeah. And so so I would speak, initially I'd speak to the guys who were part of the Date with Dad dance, and because they're in a program, because they're on their way out.
Uh-huh.
And so we would have, just beautiful, deep conversation. And then they were like, "Well, will you go to A Bay and B Bay and C?" I'm like, "Yeah, okay. All right, cool. I'm ready. I got it. I got it. I'm good. Yeah, go ahead." I wasn't prepared to do this. You know, the first time.
Of course.
It's like, they were like, "Yippee, all right, get in there." Swam. Okay.
You're going to open that again, right? I get to go back out?
Exactly. So that's how that went down.
And what was, what did you learn from that experience? What did you take away from the guys that you were talking to?
Wow, man. I have to say, it was a selfish experience, because hearing myself out loud, being as honest as I could, help me understand more about myself.
Yeah.
And say, "Okay, oh, I am that way. Okay, I'm all right. I'm not a bad guy." Okay. You know, I have to be honest, I hate to say it. It was, and their response, it was like, "Well, you know what? It just let me know that, man, you know what? You got a powerful, voice, and all the gifts that you've been blessed with, you can use it and you can try to help somebody sincerely."
You do have a powerful voice.
I do.
It's a good radio voice. Did you ever do radio?
I would love to. I grew up, I did it in the military. Yeah, I was in the Army. I did some radio, but I grew up fascinated with radio as well. It was Kirby Carmichael, the rockin' jock. I'm not joking. And I just met him for the first time last year. I was fortunate enough to be asked to be the Grand Marshal of the Christmas Day Parade.
Oh, that's nice.
And he was there. And you know, I went back to 11-year-old Chad. I was just a giggly little schoolboy. I can't believe I'm meeting you, you know. Honest truth, yeah. So radio was always, because that's like one of the kind of first ways that piques your imagination, you know?
Sure.
Because you're listening to someone, you don't see them, you know, and you're hearing the commercials and everything. So that kind of stimulated my imagination early on. So it was more, you probably didn't have a TV at that time, you know? So radio became that thing.
And
so
it really is the first, not only does it pique your imagination, but it's also the first time when you learn the difference between your imagination and reality, because every time you meet a radio guy for the first time, you're like, "You look like that." Like, that voice comes out of that fucking body. Exactly. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
It's true. The strangest thing that's when you see those guys.
That's true.
Like a guy. See, like, I feel like your voice matches your physical structure. Like, you look like a strong dude.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
There are dudes with your voice.
Right.
They're just like, "You're a tiny Asian guy?" Like, it's just the it's like the weirdest.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if oh God, who's the guy with Ryan Seacrest? He's all over the country. My daughter loves him.
I don't know.
God, you do know him. He's first. He's like the first openly gay guy on air, and it's a syndicated rock station.
I don't know who
that's
is
all
that?
Over the country.
Who is?
Yeah,
that?
I don't know. I'm trying to
Look
think.
That up, Katie.
Yeah, he. Oh yeah. He's our iHeartRadio, but he's also. It's a syndicated rate, and it's Z100 in New York, but they're syndicated, and so I had that experience back meeting him for the first time at iHeartRadio Music Festival in Vegas. So when I saw him, he doesn't look, you know, the way he sounds. He doesn't look the way he sounds at all. So, I'm trying. God, what is his name? Elvis. Elvis, Elvis.
His name is Elvis?
Yeah.
Is it another Elvis?
Yeah, because it's Elvis in the morning, I believe.
I'm Elvis Presley, too.
Yeah, right. But I mean, it's really cool that he's like... no, you got to go syndicated radio talk show, radio DJ. Okay. Syndicated rock radio DJ.
And then iHeartRadio, you said he's on iHeartRadio?
Yeah.
Or Z100?
It's
Look up Z100.
Elvis, I think it's Elvis Durant.
Elvis Durant, yeah. Hey, there you go. Nice.
These things. Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. See? Yeah. Now, if you could play his and hear his voice, that
it doesn't match.
Doesn't match.
What kind of music would you, if you were a DJ, what would your station be?
Oh, my. It would be a mix of things for me.
That's how listen to music now.
Yeah.
Remember growing up, it was you like, you were in a lane.
Yeah, my sister was the first one that like kind of introduced me to rock. So listen to this, you know.
Yeah.
But we would say, I'm just keeping it real. She'd say, listen to the white station.
That's what they were.
So it's like, that's how people, you know, kind of oriented to
of course.
Certain things.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I, you know, I started listening to rock, man. It's amazing, you know? So it would be a mix of things. It would be rock, rap, pop. I mean, I don't know if I would want to do it, but I don't know if I would want to put jazz, you know. But I listen to it all, man. There's not much I don't listen to. Honestly, I'm not a huge fan of country.
Right.
But for the most part, everything else, show tunes, the bebop era, the, you know, Sinatra, you name it. I listen to it.
Now, when you left college to go be in the Army, is that correct?
I did.
And what made you decide that was something that you wanted to do?
Well, initially what happened was I was a ward of the court of the state of Virginia. I didn't have legal parents. Even though I was living with my grandmother, God rest her soul, she passed away at 97 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was living with her, but she didn't adopt me. So I didn't have legal parents. So anybody in that position got a free ride to college, which I was like applauding the state of Virginia, you know, for that. Like,
yeah.
Wow, you guys really. So they were saying, you know what? If that kid made it through all of that, we should reward him with, a free education.
That's great.
That's awesome. Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan said, "What the hell did you say?" I need that money. I need that money for defense. And he took the program away.
Oh shit!
So I ended up having to go to school. I came up to New York. Went to New York. Auditioned, you know, got in, got accepted at NYU Tisch School of the Arts, and he just snatched that away because I couldn't afford it. You know, if I wasn't going to get a scholarship, I couldn't afford it. So I went to my hometown school, Virginia Commonwealth University, great theater program. But of course, I wanted to be in New York, so I said, "All right, this is what I'll do: I'll go in the military, I'll get a vocation, I'll take that training, go to New York, I'll work that job while I pursue my career."
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's very resourceful.
Yeah, you know what? And it's funny because I knew a lot of people who were very, very resentful of the fact that I was actually a video cameraman and a radio guy and photographer in the Army.
Uh-huh.
They were like, what the hell? Why didn't I get that job? I said, well, I don't know. I just walked in and said, hey, man, you got anything in communications? He popped the videotape in. It was an 84 Foxtrot, an audio visual specialist. I was like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, I like that. And he said, well, you can't go right now. I was like, no, it's okay. I'm going to finish up my freshman year. I'll be back in May. He's like, yeah, well, that's when we would ship you out. So it worked out. And I traveled all over the world. I shot the first music video for the Army. I shot public service announcements with like the Boston Celtics, the Giants, Jets. I had a cool ass job, man.
Oh man,
yeah.
What was the first music video for the Army?
See, well, usually they have those old stoic soldiers. Yeah. You know, we went to Nashville, and we got a country music singer to record this song, "Good Morning Soldier, Good Morning Ma'am." Hello, new recruit, an officer in command. I'm proud to know you. Just thought I'd show you that I'm glad to see the Army's in your hands.
See, now I think you need to be a country music star.
Charlie Pride got it.
Charlie Pride, baby.
So we went there, we recorded him, and then we went out and we shot, you know, the video to match it. And it was just hip and cool and up to date. I have soldiers today that go, oh man, yeah, you know, because they get way more hyped. You know, it's like being on. Have you been on Virgin?
Yeah.
And they do the whole.
Yeah.
Like, that's in your seat. It's like having that experience as opposed to what we normally get.
I feel like someone else mentioned that not that long ago, and we talked about it. And I said, you know, the first time I heard that, I was like, this is amazing. The 20th time I heard that on Virgin, I was like,
I said, give me a fucking break.
Like, really? What I want to say to Virgin America is like, put it in rotation.
Exactly.
Like, you put it in, have it in rotation. Yeah. But those flight attendants who hear that every time.
Lord have mercy.
I think
man.
One of them is just going to calmly go over and just rip the speaker out with her bare hand. But
what's funny is that I think like the performers in the video are like, God, I hope there's a director on the plane.
Hello, this is Steven Spielberg. I couldn't help but notice your fantastic seatbelt song performance, and I would like to put you in a Jurassic movie. Park movie.
Exactly.
Here come the dinosaurs. They're out of control.
Okay, well, keep going.
Did you find the? I want you to find the Army song. Okay. What's it called?
Wow, that's gonna. I don't know.
If it's a music video from the 80s, it's on YouTube somewhere.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I sang, that's about all I know of it. I think it's glad to see the Army's in your hands. I think it's that.
Glad to see the Army's in your hands.
Yeah.
Is that it?
I see music video.
I hope this is it.
I do too.
I'm glad to see the Army's in your hands.
That's it. Yeah. That's it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is it.
Are you in this?
No. Yes, I am. I'm sure. I'm the guy at the bus station. If this is it, I don't know. This is. Yeah, I'm trying to remember this. This is it. Yeah, this is it.
Oh my God.
That's what I was singing, right? Because I sang it in the studio too. Now you're gonna see me at the bus station, waiting for the bus. This is unbelievable. I am losing my mind right now. Oh, I am. And I'm going to show you the video I shot.
There you are! Hey! There you are! The bus stop!
Oh, no. I told you, brother.
That was at about...
You, yes.
If you watch the video, it's at about 2:58 or so. That was fantastic. So, Katie, I think the thing to do is... just trim down some of us watching the video... Until, of course, we get to Chad's part. And then just we'll rip the song and we'll just put it at the end of the podcast. After we sign off, we'll just play the song.
Sweet.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah, brother, it was crazy.
You probably haven't seen that in...
And my God, man. Oof. Since 19, probably about 88.
I told you YouTube is a repository for everything you thought you forgot about. Yeah.
Never even. Ooh. Nah, man, I'm serious. I got chills, bro. That's crazy. Yeah. That's it. See, and Lisa can say, he's not lying. He didn't make that shit up.
So then when you were in the Army for a handful of years, and then did you go back to school after that, to performing arts school?
No. I went in 85 to 89. When I got out, I went for it.
And then did you put your resume to New York?
New York. Put your resume and my acting teacher from high school was actually in New York pursuing his career by that time. So he was able to point me in the right direction, you know, get your pictures done, your resume, this is how it should look. And so I did that, and I started going around throwing pictures under doors. And there's a publication called The Backstage for non-union actors. And so I did that, and the first thing I got was a stand-in on The Cosby Show.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So I went in, and there were lines around the block of people wanting to audition for this thing. I didn't even know what a stand-in was, but, you know, I just heard Cosby Show, and maybe there's a shot, you know. And so I went in, and I booked it, and so I started doing that. And it was, you know, a great learning experience, and just to have opportunity to be up close and personal. I know all the controversy now, but back then, you didn't know back then. Right. So it was just an amazing opportunity to be up and close and personal with a dude that with that kind of talent. And, you know, kind of befriended Malcolm Jamal at one point. And, you know, it was a wild experience. But also, it was one of those things that, you know, I really did it to try to get on the show. And that wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you put the tape across you with the name of the character on it.
Right.
And that's what you do.
Right.
And I remember having a conversation with Malcolm. I said, wait, I'm an actor, man. Why do you think I'm here? I'm an actor. He's like, oh, okay, I don't know, you know. And so as the shows went on, I was like, I'm not going to get a chance to be on the show. I know I can do what they're doing. And so I got frustrated, and they basically fired me. They did. Like, because I started doing stuff like, dang, it's stupid. Why would I move in front of that person like that?
Right.
And then they would come over the mic. Aren't you supposed to be on the other side? And then he would call us all together, stand-ins, get over here. The people upstairs are very upset. I'm not going to say who, but I just want you to know that the people upstairs are not happy. And everybody's going like, is it me? Is it me? I'm like, you know it's me. I don't know why you guys are being paranoid and panicking for it. You know she's talking to me. You know, but it got a little humiliating at times. Like, we're standing right beside the assistant stage manager, but she's going, stand-ins, where are the stand-ins?
Oh, yeah.
Just to make us, you know.
Just to treat you like like props,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, and she was always like, I would go over and I'm talking to Malcolm and some of the other guys, and she would be like, I don't understand why you're over here.
Ugh.
Like, I'm over here because I'm a human being, and so is he. He just happens to do this thing that I do too, that you know I do it because that was the other part of it. You got to play the part, even though nobody ever saw you play it. I'm Theo, baby. I was Theo. That's what you people fail to understand, that I was Theo. You just didn't see it. It's on the cutting room floor. I was there.
You just need to go. You need to go to a bar while they were showing that show, exactly. And then just like mouth the words in front of people.
Hey,
and go,
man, I was close to doing that, bro. I would leave, man. I would leave, you know, because they taped on on Thursday nights, I believe. And man, once we were done, we were done. It's like, you know, we weren't. I don't recall us being. No, I didn't want to stay. I would get on the train and cry. I literally did, man.
Because it was humiliating.
Because I was like, I know I can do this. And, you know, I'm not getting the opportunity that he's getting. And I know I can do it. So cut to Malcolm Jamal Warner has a show called Here and Now.
Uh-huh.
It only lasted 5 episodes. I got cast as one of his friends on the show.
Oh, that's great. Did he remember you?
Of course. I said, I told you. So, you know, that doesn't happen to people often. And I'm not going to get into it, but it was probably one of the worst experiences of my life.
It sounds like it was a humiliating experience, but at the same time, I think a valuable experience. Because it taught you, I think it probably taught you in success how to be, you know? Like it taught you that everyone is a human being,
yeah,
and that you would never be in a position where you'd be like, get that stand-in away from
exactly
me.
Right.
Put the tape back on his chest. I'm Chad fucking Coleman. I am Theo.
There's a possibility that I could become a tyrannical asshole. I got to make more money first.
there's definitely an asshole threshold. Yeah, well,
you know, right. You can be.
Where people are like, yeah, but he's, it sucks, but I mean.
Oh, my God. I saw Pacino at the Four Seasons yesterday. I just couldn't stop looking at the guy, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so he could be an asshole if he wants to be. It's okay.
He'd be fine.
I'm not a problem.
Did you talk to him?
No, I was not going to go over there. Because it was, you know, we all know, don't bother.
It was real sad to see what they did to Tyrese. Those motherfuckers. Oh, wow. Pacino, nice to meet you. I saw him, I guess maybe 10 years ago, the AFI did a tribute to Al Pacino, and Jeremy Piven hosted, and my friend Blaine and I got hired to come in and write. What?
The stand-up comedian?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I just saw him in Madison Square Garden.
Oh, nice. Oh, no, different Blaine. But the other Blaine Capatch writes on our show now. He was definitely not performing at Madison Square Garden.
No, it was Blaine Cook. I'm thinking it was Blaine Cook.
Oh, Dane Cook.
Dane Cook.
Yeah. No, Blaine, totally, Dane. Totally different.
Insane in the membrane. Insane in the brain.
Insane in the membrane. But I think, or Memblaine. But my friend Blaine Capad should be at Madison Square Garden, but we are lucky enough to have him on at midnight. But we would write jokes for Piven during the show. Like, things would happen, and we would give him jokes off the side of the stage. And so we were doing this tribute to Al Pacino and Charlize Theron and all these really famous people there. And backstage, it was really funny to see the dynamic of Al Pacino, who you think could come off stage and just be like, another award I deserve. But his whole thing was like, I don't understand. I mean, I just do a job and people, and I mean, it's nice, but I don't get, like, he didn't. And he wasn't being forced. He wasn't forcing humility. He was just. He really was like, I don't get it.
Right.
It's nice that they do this, but I just do a job.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm glad to hear that. So that means I probably could have said hi.
You could have said hi. Yeah.
Or if he's still the same.
If he's still the
same. He might be.
I've changed. Get out of my fucking face. Put tape on these people. You're all stand-ins to me.
Now that, my friend, is hilarious.
You know, make a good story.
Yeah, I was like, wow. I was like, why am I fixated right now? I was like, well, you know what? Because he's a fucking legend. That's why.
Of course.
Because the man has done amazing work for so long, you know? And so that's what, because in a way, I wish I was like cool, like, you know, oh, Al Pacino, anybody worrying about Al Pacino, man? What's going on, baby? Tell me about your day.
Yeah. You know, if you did that, he might, like, someone, he might connect with you. You know, it's tough to say. You don't know, but it's because he's so influential to you.
Dude.
That it's just.
You know.
Yeah.
If you go up to that man and he burst that mystique bubble, it's an ugly feeling.
Of course.
So I just, you know, I say, you know what? I would rather just revere you from afar. I want to get over there and see what you're eating. But, you know, I wanted to go over there. Now, I used to be the go over there guy.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had a few, like, wow, okay, that really happened.
Like bad experiences?
Really, very rude. Okay. Oh.
Do you want to say, or do you not want to?
Well, the one that was hurt me, it was Patrick Ewing, you know, and you know he's huge,
of course,
and it could have been a nice kind of Mean Joe Green moment if people know.
He throws you the jersey,
yeah, it's all good.
You share a Coke.
This guy, I said Patrick Ewing, and I put my hand out. You got to see, what is he, 6'8"? And he's just looking at me like, who the fuck are you?
Oh.
And why are you in my face? And I was like, wow. I mean, I think my head just stayed out, right? And I just turned and walked away. I was like, I looked back, but then I looked back and he was talking to this girl.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, maybe I tried to.
Yeah. You know,
and this one, I'm going to call him out. I'm going to call him out because I this one really floored me. And this is not too far in the distant past, but Michael Strahan.
Oh, really?
I said, Michael Strahan. And he said, he went back like, who the fuck are you?
Oh.
I was like, wow, okay, maybe I shouldn't have assumed you watched The Wire.
Or The Walking Dead.
Well, no, I wasn't on there.
Oh,
it
you
was
weren't
before
on
that.
Okay.
But I was like, wow.
But it shouldn't matter whether or not you're on The Wire. Like,
no, but
should,
you know how
just...
they do, bro. A lot of them do. It's like, if they don't know who you are,
yeah.
you're not validated. And I'm doing my fingers.
The air quotes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Why am I doing that? I don't know. But anyway, yeah, it's just, it's a strange deal. I can get if you're possibly having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
And you just simply say that, you know.
Or you're cock-blocking Patrick Ewing.
That, and then that's when I had to take, my bad, take the hit, Chad. I was actually trying to get to the girl myself, to be truthfully told. But I always find that stuff really fascinating, too, though, man. You know, how we negotiate a public that is really responsible in a lot of ways for our thing.
Sure.
I mean, we don't do it in a vacuum. We don't do it in a I do, but I don't. I'll talk about that later. No, we don't. It's for, you know, and these guys, maybe you would be playing football anyway, but it's a whole different animal because it is an entertainment aspect to it.
Yeah.
So the relationship with the audience should be one of, for me, it should be one of gratitude.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for coming to the game. Thanks for watching the show.
Right.
But a lot of people who do this thing don't make that connection. The audience becomes an annoyance, and that's hard for me, you know?
And I think applicable to, especially, I mean, The Wire had a huge audience, but, you know, of course, Walking Dead has a very passionate audience.
Absolutely.
And so it is... you know, and you know that there's a direct correlation between the audience supporting, the fans supporting the show and the success of the show.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
You can feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question about that. And that's one of the amazing parts about having this experience where, honestly, The Wire has been a beautiful slow burn, you know.
Yeah.
It's just built up. But, and it, you know, has a sustainability that's, okay, that's amazing, but... He's Walking Dead fans, man. They're just, you know, just passionate, effusive, rabid, you know. And so, you know, that's been a crazy thrill ride, you know, and how to negotiate it. Because I don't, you know, I try to just be my authentic self, you know. So, you know, I engage people on a level. Sometimes I don't understand why someone would break down crying in front of me. But that's just the path, you know. So I just deal with it like, you know, try just which is with as much gratitude as possible.
Yeah.
But I try to say, hey, listen, honestly, look, I'm just a person. Okay. I know it's a great show. I get it. But I just want you to know that I'm just a regular person. I'm just fortunate to have this talent, okay? I just want you to carry. Well, I don't know why I do that, but I do want them to carry that with them, you know?
Yeah.
Just carry with you that. And I'm glad you're having this experience. But at the same time, you know, I'm just Mr. Reality.
Cut to you meeting Al Pacino. Nice to meet you. Al, I don't know what to say. At this moment, I never...
That's my favorite
I'm
part.
Sorry.
Would you just say that for me?
No, I don't mean to get tears on your suit.
You're probably right. And then he say, see? See? What were you saying? Nothing. 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 Nothing at all.
So now you're on the sci-fi show, The Expanse, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so... But and you jumped to that pretty quickly, right?
Those guys came out of the box as soon as I was free, you know, once the word got around.
Yeah.
Those guys came right away and they came with an offer. And so that was, I was, you know, incredibly appreciative of the fact that they said, man, we know how good you are. And we just want you to come play with us. Will you? Yeah, let's do that. You know, so, you know, it's based on these best-selling novels, Leviathan Wakes. Each one of them was a New York Times best-selling novel. I think it was five of them. So you got that. And so that's a fan base right there already. Then you got this amazing cast, you know, Thomas Jane. And
yeah. I know Tom. He's a nice guy.
Oh, he's real cool.
Never wears shoes.
That's
though.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah. Yo,
shoes.
I don't know how he pulls it off, man. I mean, I'm part African, man, but I'm putting some shoes on, dude. In these streets.
Especially in Los Angeles. Yeah, our saying, streets are
this
dirty.
Dude, this dude is like, yeah. But just masterfully cool, you know, just, you know, just a rare breed, man, you know. Just a real, real cool dude, man. He just something about him reminds me of, and I don't know if I should make that cross reference, but what was the actor that, what was it, the karate movie back in Kung Fu? He played
David Carradine?
Yeah, he has a David Carradine feel to him, you know.
Yeah. Cool, but quiet, probably, confidence.
Yeah, but it's just real earthy cat, you know? Mm-hmm. Just a real earthy, authentic dude. I really dug. I didn't have that much with him because the construct is just like The Wire and just like The Walking Dead. You got all these amazing characters, you know.
Yeah.
So everybody's carrying their own storyline, and you know, and we interchange with each other at certain points, but it's not always. So the times I spent around him, though, I was fascinated, man. Really. It's like, wow, I'm going to take my shoes off. And then I thought about how my feet look, and I said, no. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to abuse you people with it. Ask my daughter.
Is there any part, because obviously I would imagine because you're built the way you're built, it's probably really a no-brainer for people like, oh, you know, Chad's like, he can be like the intimidating guy in here. He can be the really strong guy. Do you ever kind of feel trapped by that because you want to do different kinds of things and it's a little more like, no, just see me as this type of character. I'd love to play this type of character. Well, or are you like, hey, work's work?
No. It happens. If you watch it, you'll see what it is, because very few big guys can access vulnerability the way I can.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what makes it very intriguing, you know, because so even though I stay in this one physical place, you know, psychologically and emotionally, I can do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much what it is. And that goes back to I was not this size. I got this size when I went in the Army. I looked like an eighth grader as a senior in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like five. Let me see. Well, what my U.S. Army ID card said was 5'10", 149.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I was not.
That's me. Like,
yeah,
that's.
I was going to say it, but I was like, no, I might be a little bit off. So, yeah, that's. And so I was not a big guy. I was bullied a lot and, you know, the whole. But I was also really popular.
You got to go back to those reunions and kick the shit out of everyone.
Well, you know what? They're all dead.
I saw to it. I was taking care of things. I ain't going to the Army for no reason.
Nature bullied them for me.
No, the crazy part about it, I'll give you one story. Like, the biggest bully, you know, I mean, this guy was, Butchie was insane, man. I watched Butchie just beat a guy, you know, to a pulp. Blood, I'm watching blood that come out of his scalp.
Jesus.
Yeah, so he was, you see that, and then you go, well, you know what? I'm okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So he was an intimidating guy, and he, you know, put his money where his mouth was, and he beat the shit out of people. And you saw that, and you said, well, you know what? I really just don't want to engage in that.
Yeah.
You know, what do you want? You want my lunch money? Here. You got me. So it was, you know, we were dealing with that. And then his counterpart was Tommy, 6'4", 230. And those two just basically menaced us all. You know, he would do stuff like, I'm on the bus, and Butchie and Tommy are sitting in the same, you know, in, over here, and I'm across the aisle. And this is something to give you, this is the honest truth. So Butchie looks across at me, and he goes, hey, yo, Tommy, smash that in head in the glass. So I said, oh, wow, okay, Chad. I'm kidding you not, man. This is how crazy it was. And I said, all right, Chad, okay, prepare for impact. don't stiffen up. That way you won't have a broken neck.
Oh my
Just
God.
Go with it. And then they would fuck with our heads all the time. Tommy goes, no, man, Chad's my friend. And I said, oh, God, thank you, Jesus.
But you know what? It underscores your ability to adapt to any situation. You had the presence of mind to say, I'm going to relax.
I said, do not stiffen up. Because if you do, you know, the outcome is going to be even worse. But then, you know what? 3 days later, I'm walking down the hall, and all of a sudden, bang, in the small of my back, fist. I go, argh! And I turn around, and he goes, ain't a motherfucking thing you going to do about it.
Oh, man.
And I was like this. But what was I going to do?
And whatever happened to that guy?
Well, let me see. Now, Butchie, the one that beat the guy to a pulp, he became a crack addict.
Okay.
Now, here's poetic justice in some way. My best friend was Eric Jones. Eric Jones became a crack dealer.
Oh.
Tommy's coming to the house. I see this. And this is classic shit, man. It's sad, but it's crazy. Like, first he saw me, and I was all buff now because I came out of the military. And he's like, I ain't fucking with you no more. I was like, man, you know, I'm just not that way. You know, chill on that anyway. You know, I'm not going to kick your ass just because you terrorized my ass for 3-4 years. And then the next day he's coming down the street and he's got speakers and he's going to Eric's house and trying to sell speakers to get crack.
Oh, my God.
I said, well, dude, I guess karma's a motherfucker, man. You know? He died, man. Crack
had
it.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Now, Tommy's still alive and actually ended up dating one of Eric's sisters. And Eric didn't make it. Eric died at 40, you know, because he got into all that stuff. I tried to tell him way back then to come in the army with me, but he didn't do it. So that's the crazy deal, bro. Well, that goes back to I was 5. You know, I was a little dude in school, but with a big mouth, as you can tell.
I mean, you didn't just survive that situation. You completely surpassed. I mean,
I was fortunate, man. I got to say, you know, no doubt about it. It's a simple equation. Foster parents who cared. Being introduced to theater and an acting teacher who cared and a choir teacher who cared. And people said there's a world outside this place. Now, not to make it too disparaging, you know, but that was, you know, and so it was whatever I was cursed with for that kind of crabs in a barrel, you know, a lot of angry, mean people. There were also people who were very encouraging, you know. So they guided me in the right way, and I didn't get pulled into the darker side of the thing. And now, you know, I go back home and try to help out as much as I can. My brother's a minister and the head of the school board, and, yeah, I have to give him a tremendous amount of credit. He was always doing great in school. He's the first person that was in the play. You know, he was a straight A student and always involved in projects. And so he was an inspiration to me to not, you know, go the wrong way. So
yeah.
I've been very fortunate to, you know, the community is as a positive, good people in the community as much as responsible for me being here as my own, you know, drive. And
well, that's why it's important to remember that when you contribute and do good things for someone, the return on that, because that will have a pyramid effect on the people that they encounter.
Mm-hmm.
So that it really, it's not, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, whatever, I helped out one guy. You're
right.
Not just helping out one guy. You're helping out every person. That person's going to help out too.
Absolutely. You're paying it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that it worked out, because you're a hell of a nice guy, and it's been really fun. It was really fun to, you know, get to even in a slightly distant way, kind of take the journey with you when you joined the show,
mm-hmm.
and watching Tyrese, and you know, and you know, he was such a great character because he could have murdered everyone with his hands, exactly. And he really had that internal struggle of like, is this who we are? I can't be a part of any more of this violence.
That's right. Because I always felt I always felt it was the beginning of a new world, world is coming to an end, so fuck it, we got to do whatever.
Right.
It's like, no, I think this is the beginning of a new world. So how are we going to do this? And are we going to learn from what we know? And can we do it better? Can we get it right? So that was always just, you know, what I personally carry with me.
Can we relax our bodies so that when the impact comes, we don't break our necks?
Relax your arm, Chad, and let the walker just see. I used that technique on my final episode.
I miss you, but I'm so glad to hear about the new show. When is The Expanse on? When is that coming?
It's
going to
be on the Sci-Fi Network, and it's going to happen in December.
Okay.
We were hoping July, but actually I'm glad it's not, because December, it's cold. People are at home, you know, for those who live in those areas, you know, then they can snuggle up and watch. This show is going to be amazing. It's spaceship drama, man. We don't have one. Yeah, the last really good one was probably Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
So this is we're in Mars, and, you know, I'm playing Fred Lucius Johnson. If I'm not Fred Lucius Johnson, who is?
He doesn't exist without you.
That's like you say, like, you know, like your body. I absolutely look like that. So it's a really cool guy who's he's sort of like Colin Powell, you know, like Colin Powell was duped by Bush and Cheney. Go and tell them there are weapons of mass destruction. So it's something to that effect that happens to him, and he's end up getting known by the people as the butcher, but by the government as a hero.
Right.
And so he's got some work to do that the government doesn't know about, and it's going to be really, really cool.
I think December is a good time, because a lot of the other shows take a break in December.
Absolutely.
And if you like television, there's just kind of a hole in the schedule.
Right.
So that'll be fantastic.
Point. Great point.
It's good to see you. Thank you so much for coming on.
And let me mention one thing, like we did before. Yeah, I have to mention Dreadwater.
Anything you want.
Yeah, I just, it's just want people to know that what we're putting together is a transmedia franchise. So we have a graphic novel that's available on Amazon. We have a video game that we're developing, an interactive web series, a motion comic, and we're developing a TV show.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, man. So it's and we're going to be, you know, we're going to be in comic book stores all over the country. Mm-hmm. We're working on an initiative right now to really push to get the graphic novel out there in a way that we get that bestseller tag.
Yeah.
And we're also at all the conventions, you know, we're going to be at C2E2. And so, you
Chicago.
Know, And so I'm part owner and co-executive producing the television show. So this is a huge endeavor, man. So please check out treadwater.tv and at TRD. Just take Treadwater. Take the vowels out of Treadwater.
Right.
Yeah. And then you'll get and go at that.
And perfect.
You find out what's going on with that. So that's, you know, a major deal that really excited about, and it's an amazing storyline. It's 15 years in the future, and we got the Euro crashes, and so it's kind of like every country for itself.
Are you sure that's in the future?
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. I feel like that was a couple weeks ago.
Exactly. 15 years ain't far enough out, Chad. So there's this guy who's we secretly hired, and he's sort of like Mandy Patinkin from Homeland.
Yeah.
And he is charged with putting this operative together. And so he goes out, and there's all these six different kinds of people, you know, amazing people. And we got a robot wraith in it. And we got, all these people from varying different backgrounds. And it's all this elaborate kind of storytelling like Lost did, you know, with flashbacks and things of that nature and cross-references and people, characters cross-referencing. It's very dark, you know, and very, Batman-ish kind of, you know, and the superhero that's struggling through the darkness. So it's really exciting. It's very sexy. And I got a really cool, hot character, you know, Mr. O.C. He's an arms dealer and drives around on a 747 and is tricked out and, you know, cigar smoking. And what he does, he sells secrets and arms. Who wants it? You got my money? But if you cross them, it's problematic. And the funny part about it, man, I kid you not, I met these guys. They had no idea how Tyrese was going to make his demise, and you know, with the arm getting cut.
Yeah.
Well, this character has an arm cut off too, and they did not know, because I know you wouldn't give anything like that away. So when they showed me a rendering of the character, I said, oh, shit. So I couldn't say nothing then. And then later on, when they saw it, they were like, this was meant to be. And I was like, yeah, I think so. You can't make that one up. So
Treadwater.tv.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Congratulations. And I'm very excited that you are also taking control of your career too by making something that you care about.
Yeah, brother, you are a resourceful individual. You're out there, you know, taking control of your career as well, you know, and allowing your creativity to work in other ways, not just being a stand-up comedian. You know, you're doing so many other things, man, and I just feel like, you know, I mean, these things came my way too, you know, and it didn't feel foreign.
Yeah.
No, it felt like, yeah, this is cool. This is the right thing to do. And then all of a sudden, you know, a light goes on and you go, wow, I got this wealth of knowledge and experience. I can do these other things. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
Would you please end the podcast by telling people to enjoy their burrito? It's how we sign off the podcast. But you have a really good voice, so I prefer you do it instead of me.
Enjoy your burrito.
See, I was right. You're going to come back every episode. Also, fuck you, Michael Strahan.
Yeah, baby.
Wait, please don't hit me. I can't back that up. I can't back that up.
It's okay.
5'10", 145. Can't back that up. I'm going to get an elbow in the back from Michael Strahan.
Hey, brother. Ain't nothing you can do about it.
You're right. You're just right.
You're right. Oh, man. That's great.
All right.
Yeah, brother.
Good morning, ma'am. Hello, new recruit, an officer in command. I'm proud to know you, just thought I'd show you. I'm glad to see the army is in your hands. Freedom calls from time to time, and you're the ones that lay it on the line. And so I dedicate this song to you. Sometimes it's a hot ride, but you got a lot of pride. It shows in the way you do all the things you do. You don't do it cause you have to. You're not in it for yourself. You don't do it for the glory or the right to brag. You do it cause you want to, like your father did it before you. Do it for the night. You're that computer navigator,
that computer operator.
You're the driver, the company clerk,
the soldier on the ground. You're the tank and the doctor,
you repair the helicopter. You're the spokes in the wheel that makes the whole deal go around. The home of the brave. You're the parts of a working team. You're the hearts where freedom rings. You're the eye of the cobra that hovers on high. You're the mind that maps the road, the backs that share the load.
You are the hand that takes hold and make it fly. So good evening, soldier.
Good evening, sir. All over the USA and in foreign lands.
I'm proud to know you.
I'm proud to know.
Just thought I'd show you.
I'm glad to see the army is in your hands.
You don't do it cause you have to. You're not in it for yourself. You don't do it for the glory or the right to brag.
You do it cause you want to.
Like your father did before you.
Do it for the flag. You do it for the flag.
And I'm glad to see the army.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.